Welcome to Rights Watch, a program about human rights around the world from Human Rights Watch. I'm Amy Costello. The 2012 Human Rights Watch Film Festival opens in London later this month. Many of the films in this year's lineup explore economic inequality and its consequences, a timely topic given the popular uprisings that have occurred in the United States and around the globe. In the documentary film The Price of Sex, viewers get a harrowing look at life for young women in today's Eastern Europe. Many of them face grinding poverty, fractured family lives, and see few economic prospects ahead. These young women are preyed upon by traffickers who dupe them into traveling abroad, where they are forced into prostitution. Joining us to talk about The Price of Sex is Liesl Gernholz, director of the Women's Rights Division at Human Rights Watch, and the film's writer, director, and producer, Mimi Chakarova. Mimi is a Bulgarian-born photojournalist. In one scene, Mimi takes us through a notorious red-light district in Istanbul, Turkey, called Aksaray. We drive through the streets at night, as Mimi narrates.
The pimps make the rules around here. This is how it works. A woman is sold by a trafficker to a pimp. This becomes her debt. The pimp convinces the woman that the quicker she works it off, the quicker she'll be released. But the price for her freedom doesn't end there. She's charged for room and board, even for taking a shower. The pimps pocket everything she earns.
Mimi, describe Aksaray for me.
When you go to Aksaray, you enter, especially in the nighttime, you enter an entirely different world, which is dangerous. Everyone is watching, everyone knows everyone, and there are a lot of sex clubs, which are mostly located in basements. And when you enter these spaces, there is one way in and one way out, and there is a lot of security at every entrance. Obviously, you don't go to these places unless you know someone who can take you in.
Why is it so heavily secured?
Because of the nature of the business which is being conducted, which is prostitution and trafficking.
As I watched those scenes that take place in that red light district, and we see kind of shots of windows with women hanging out of them, or windows at night lit up with, you know, curtains waving behind it. And the idea that kept coming to me was hidden in plain sight. The women you describe are captive yet public. We see them walking down the street. We see them hanging out of windows. How are these women prevented from escaping down the city streets?
It's an excellent question, which many people who see the film ask, and it's a valid question. And you have to understand the levels of control and the amount of time that it takes to fully control a woman. One example that I can give you is if during this break-in period, which is the initial period when a woman is sold by a trafficker to a pimp, and she realizes the nature of the work she will have to do, that she will not be a waitress or a nanny or a factory worker, that indeed she will be sold into prostitution against her will, and she resists. At this moment, the break-in period begins, and the break-in period involves the woman being locked into a space, a room, starved, beaten, gang raped. You don't speak the language. You have no idea where you are. You can be in one neighborhood, but you never actually leave this neighborhood for the first 6 or 8 months that you're there. And sometimes the women do manage to escape. Sometimes through the help of a client or on their own, they manage to get to a police station. And many of the women I've interviewed tell me, yes, I got to the police station and I recognized some of the police officers who now are wearing uniform were in the brothel just, you know, last week. And those were the same guys who would pick up the phone and call the pimp to come and collect the woman who's managed to escape. So it's such a brutal cycle. It's not as simple as if the window is open, why couldn't they just escape?
And you do profile a woman who actually does find an open window, and she jumps.
Yes, she felt like she only had two choices. She was either going to die locked in this place, or she was going to jump. And she was not jumping to commit suicide. She was jumping because it was the only way to escape the brothel.
Liesl, Mimi has painted a picture here of an industry that obviously takes place in huge secrecy in a way. There's so much security around these women, so few options for them. The crimes themselves are obviously taking place behind closed doors. Talk to me a little bit about how the kind of inherently secret nature of this industry contributes to the problem of trying to control it and curb it and ideally end it.
I think you've made a good point previously, though, about these women and girls being hidden in plain sight, because I think what is often very striking to me is the extent of collusion that you often have with the agencies who are supposed to be the protectors of women and girls in society. So Mimi's already referenced the fact that often police officers are not only aware of what's going on, but they are actually actively participating in it. They've been much research that is documented that, you know, giving a police officer a girl or letting him know that he can come to the brothel often to have sex without charging him is a way of making sure that, you know, you're not policed, there's no investigation. So I think in some respects, it's an extremely secretive, invisible industry. And of course, that makes it very hard to reach the girls. It makes it very hard to police it and eradicate it. But at another level, there is this collusion amongst not only, I guess, the state institutions like the police and prosecutors and the criminal justice system, but also at different levels of society, because women who've already been trafficked become involved in trafficking themselves. So there are so many levels at which girls and women are betrayed. And that, along then sort of with the secrecy and the security around the industry, makes it such a difficult issue to tackle.
And so where do you go from there? How do you get around that?
Tackling trafficking has to happen at a number of different levels. I mean, first, changing the way that society looks at women and girls in many places in the world. Dealing with corruption, it's about education of law enforcement officials, it's about specific training for those parts of the criminal justice system that are involved in policing and investigating trafficking. And then finally, it is about impunity, because I think impunity is a huge driver of this industry as well. It's very rare that you have traffickers being arrested, being tried, and then being sent to prison. They know that they can pay off the police. They know that the neighbors next door are unlikely to report them.
Mimi, you talk quite a bit and show us quite a bit about the families and the villages from which these women come. And the woman who jumps out of a, you know, three-story window in order to try to escape and who is then permanently injured as a result, you ask her, what were you thinking when you jumped out that window? And she says, I was thinking of my mother. And we actually go and then meet this woman's mother and father back in her village where she is now living. She's returned home. And we discover that her mother is an alcoholic. And when you ask if she's now close with her mother, she says, only when I give her money. It's so heart-wrenching.
Not everyone who goes abroad is deceived. Many find legitimate work. But what makes it easier for traffickers is that few parents ask questions once their children leave.
Talk to me about how these family connections, or the lack of them, help to fuel this trade?
This is an excellent question, and I can answer it in three parts. It's not just the fact that people don't care. It's much more deep than that. There is this notion, especially in Eastern Europe, that if you are to immigrate to the West, your life automatically is going to be better than the village from which you come from. There isn't this notion that your life could be even worse than the conditions that you escaped. The second, which is important to mention, is that it is a very patriarchal society where the life of a girl, I'm sorry to say this, but it's the truth, the life of a girl is not held at the same value as the life of a boy. So if your daughter is to go to Italy or Germany or Greece or the United States, and you ask the father, well, what state is she in or what city is she in? He's just happy that she's there. He's happy that she might be sending money home.
What we discover in the course of your film is that there are women who are taken against their will after a period of time. Some of these women, or many of these women, I don't know how many, maybe none of us do, eventually kind of stay in the industry by their own choice. We actually meet a woman who you offer to take home back to her children, and she turns you down.
Yes.
Talk to me about what happens to these women after they enter the trade against their will.
You know, one woman I interviewed in Dubai who is not in the film, who had managed to escape by the help of a client, I asked her exactly that question. I said to her, Sasha, you speak English, you have computer skills. You know, I can help you work on your resume. You can get a job at a shopping mall in Dubai. You don't have to do this. And her answer to me was, if you know what they did to me the first 2 weeks when I was brought to Dubai, what is left of me after these 2 weeks? Why should I stand on my feet and work in a shopping mall when I can go and see two guys in one night and make the same amount that I would spend the whole month making? So before passing judgment, try to imagine what it's like to be in that position and really what happens to the human spirit when you endure this much rape.
Lisa, as somebody who's advocating for human rights around the world and especially for women, what kind of challenges are presented when you're trying to advocate for the rights of people who are filled with such shame about what they've undergone, who are less likely to take to the streets or come out in public to talk about the outrages that they've endured?
Well, I think what women who have undergone the type of systematic brutalization and rape that you see so incredibly powerfully in Mimi's film, that's just one end of the extreme in terms of violence against women, because we see the stigma and shame that are attached to women who have been raped in other circumstances. So, for example, women who've been raped in the Libyan conflict feel deeply ashamed and unable to talk about their experiences and therefore unable to reach out for services, are unable to participate in processes that are trying to identify perpetrators and hold them accountable. So I think one of the things that we try to do as we do this work is to try to address the stigma and shame.
Mimi, there are many human rights issues that you could have chosen to tackle in your work. Why sex trafficking?
Why sex trafficking? Because of where I come from. I grew up in Bulgaria. I grew up in a village. I grew up under very similar circumstances. And my mom and I immigrated to the U.S., so I feel like I was traveling on the same road as many of these young women. And at a certain point, I made a left and some of them made a right. And it's that question that's been on my mind, which is also why the film is a personal film and is something which I narrated and something which I really felt an obligation to do, is understand, how is this possible? This could have been me. Why didn't this happen to me? And why did it happen to them? I wanted to go back to where I come from and address something that many people feel ashamed to talk about or neglect to talk about.
Mimi Chakarova's documentary, The Price of Sex, will have its UK premiere at the Human Rights Watch Film Festival in London later this month. We also spoke with Liesl Gernholz, director of the Women's Rights Division at Human Rights Watch. And that's Rights Watch for this week. To learn more about the Human Rights Watch Film Festival, go to ff.hrw.org. There you can read about all the films in this year's program and find out when the festival comes to a city near you. Thanks for listening to Rights Watch. I'm Amy Costello.